When something, a tragedy of this kind strikes, such a senseless attack, our first impulse is to see what we can do to help.
The U.S. Ambassador to Sri Lanka joins us to discuss the recent bombings. It's Tuesday, April 30th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, North Korea coal sanctions are challenged. China's flower power. Drones help maintain buildings, an expanding universe, and a human library. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Sri Lanka, still reeling from the impact of the deadly Easter Sunday explosions, has banned women from wearing face veils. The president implemented the ban under an emergency law. The ban went into effect Monday. Officials said the move will help security forces with the identification process as the country continues to search for the people responsible for the Easter Sunday explosions that targeted churches and hotels. In another development, Sri Lankan local media report that police have identified the woman and the girl who were pulled Saturday from rubble of a shootout between security forces and militants that killed 15 people, including 6 children. Officials say the pair are the wife and daughter of Zahran Hashim, the suspected mastermind behind the deadly attacks on churches and hotels that killed more than 250 people. Sri Lankan media released surveillance camera footage showing an alleged bomber checking into Kingsbury Hotel in the capital, Colombo, and his movements just before the bomb went off. Authorities have said that attacks, most of which in Colombo, were carried out by 9 individuals, 8 of whom are already identified. VOA Asia's Ira Melman got in touch with Elena Teplitz, the U.S. ambassador to Sri Lanka in Colombo. As we will hear, they discussed a wide range of topics.
A few days ago, you and others said there were still elements of terrorist organizations in Sri Lanka. You said they were all armed and ready to go and they could do harm to the people of the country. Is that still the case?
Well, our travel advisory indicates what we know, and that is that we still believe there are terrorists actively plotting. I think the good news is that there has been a lot of progress in the investigation. The Sri Lankan authorities have been successful in apprehending suspects and finding safe houses. These are obviously very positive developments with regard to the immediate safety and security in the people and the people of the island. I think the challenge when you're looking at a situation like this is that a lot of coordination has to happen to disrupt these active plots. And then there's a lot of work that's going to have to go on behind the scenes going forward. Coordination between intelligence and law enforcement, focus by the government on this global terror threat. So there's always going to be a need to be vigilant. And I think even after the active plot is wrapped up, the government, foreign partners, everybody's going to have to remain focused on this as a potential threat.
What has the United States done so far as reaction to the attacks that have taken place, and what further can this country do?
The United States has done a couple of things. First is we surged support to the government of Sri Lanka to help with the investigation and then apprehension of the active plotters. We have an FBI team here on the ground working hand in glove in a joint investigation with the Sri Lankan authorities. We also have been very vigilant about warning American citizens. We take seriously our obligation to protect our public and want to make sure that they have the best information possible so that they can make the best decisions about their environment. You might have noticed that our travel advisory has been upgraded twice since this event occurred, and that we are poised, of course, as new information comes in, to share with the public any threat that we might perceive is there. We also, as part of this, have been helping American citizens who were victims of this attack. So many Sri Lankans, so many families impacted by this, many others from the foreign community, but of course there were 4 Americans who lost their lives, 4 more who were injured in this, and we did our best to support them in an hour of need.
So the Sri Lankan government, with all of its recent problems, is working well with you in helping to solve the problems. Is that correct?
That's right. We have a good cooperation, and they had welcomed the help.
There's a new development that Muslims in Sri Lanka will no longer be able to veil their faces. That under an emergency law ordered by President Sirisena. It bans all kinds of face coverings, so they say they can see people's identities. Do you have any reaction to that?
Well, the government is looking, I think, at a number of emergency measures. They certainly wanted to be able to respond promptly in the wake of this attack. We have been following their efforts in this regard and encouraging them, as President Sirisena himself said, to ensure that these measures are very focused and limited to the scope of this particular incident. Going forward, the country had been working on revisions of its terrorism laws, has been looking at other reform measures, and we encourage them to continue to head in that direction. The government has committed to addressing some of the poor human rights practices of the past. We've been encouraging them to reform their processes and approaches for the future. I think this is even more reason why that needs to be done, because respecting people's democratic rights, respecting the rights of communities, is something that can coexist in a democratic society with efforts to combat global terrorism. The Sri Lankans can make very good choices about how to approach that, and the president's indication that these emergency powers would only be used to focus on the perpetrators of this terrible crime, I think, is an important acknowledgement of that.
What about the division between the Sri Lankan president and the country's prime minister? Is that still causing problems as far as politics and programs advancing in that country?
Well, you're aware of the constitutional crisis that the country was immersed in at the end of last year. That crisis was resolved, and the president and prime minister have been focused more intently on the needs of the nation. We certainly encourage them to stay focused on what needs to be done to ensure Sri Lanka's security and its prosperity going forward. A clearly united leadership is going to contribute to security and prosperity. So that's something that I think everyone's got to be mindful of. Everybody needs to rise above the politics to a certain degree.
How did you feel when this attack occurred? Here you are in a beautiful country, you have many things to do. What went through your mind when you heard that this had happened?
Well, the first thing that went through my mind with this happened is, what can we do to help? We have obligations on a number of levels, and it's a responsibility that we're certainly very proud to carry out, even while we're terribly saddened by the circumstances that we sometimes have to engage in. So our first task actually was to find out who might have been caught up in this terrible event. We had teams out searching the hospitals and the morgues to find American citizens who might have been killed or injured in this, to make sure that we could support their families. And then we were simultaneously engaging with our hosts here, with the Sri Lankan government, to see what we could do to assist and bring our resources to bear. When something, a tragedy of this kind strikes, such a senseless attack, our first impulse is to see what we can do to help everybody who's been impacted.
Any other issues that you feel we should discuss?
Well, obviously we have been very focused also on expressing our support and sympathy for the families and of the victims, in a very direct way, of course, supporting the American families. But more broadly, this was such a terrible and despicable act, and the people who were victims of it certainly did not deserve this, nor did the country here. And we want to renew our commitment to pursuing terrorist groups and to pursuing them on a global level, not just here in Sri Lanka. I think that is a challenge that all nations are ready to face and need to dig in order to ensure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Elena Teplitz, the U.S. ambassador to Sri Lanka. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Deaths of more than 300 Indonesian election officials lead to talks on reform. Mike Pompeo says U.S.-China trade talks will not be impacted by end of Iran oil waiver. Myanmar Suu Kyi in Cambodia to strengthen bilateral ties. Trans women march for their rights in conservative Indonesia. Taiwan resists as activists launch campaign to legalize marijuana. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories, much more with photos and videos on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Indonesia has released North Korean coal seized a year ago in an apparent violation of UN sanctions, posing a challenge to ongoing U.S.-led international efforts to crack down on North Korea's sanctions evasion, according to the latest report by UN sanctions monitors and court documents. The North Korean vessel Wise Honest was detained by Indonesian authorities in April 2018 when it entered Indonesian territorial waters without turning on the ship's identification transponder or notifying the ship's destined port authority to obtain ship clearance, according to a report issued by the United Nations Security Council in March. According to court documents that VOA Korean Service obtained, an Indonesian district court last November allowed the coal to be transferred to another ship owned by a Vietnamese company. Malaysian authorities then stopped that vessel. Joshua Stanton, a Washington-based attorney who helped draft the North Korean Sanctions Enforcement Act in 2016, thinks Indonesia should have seized the coal.
If the ship is involved in smuggling, the coal has to be seized. That's an obligation. They should not have released the coal. The coal should have been seized and not returned.
Stanton said the United States has legal authority to punish the ports that do not fully comply with their obligations to inspect the cargo of a ship that floats from port to port with its transponders switched off. He says North Korea also often registers its ships through shell companies and front companies operating in Hong Kong, and adds that the Hong Kong authorities have been completely lax in any kind of due diligence to verify that the companies they're registering have a legitimate business purpose. A U.S. official told VOA's Korean service that the United States is aware of this case. We thank VOA Indonesian reporters for contributing to this report, which originated in VOA Korean. Happening now in Asia, China says the United States has committed a gross interference by voicing alarm over the jailing of leaders of Hong Kong's democracy movement. China's foreign ministry says the illegal Occupy Central movement inflicted severe damage on Hong Kong's rule of law, social order, economy, and people's livelihood. Stay up to date with VOA 60. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. Chinese President Xi Jinping says people in China want bluer skies, greener mountains, and cleaner water. In his address Sunday at the opening ceremony for the 2019 Beijing International Horticultural Expo, Xi said the country has embarked on the construction of ecological civilization. China is the world's worst polluter, but has made efforts to cut down on carbon emissions in the past decade. VOA's Latika Hoke reports the Asian country is using the international gathering to demonstrate its commitment to global ecological development.
The expo is held at a 500-hectare site at the foot of the Great Wall in Beijing's Jiangqing district and will last until October 7th. More than 16 million visitors are expected to attend 2,500 activities and exhibits by more than 80 countries and 24 international organizations. A Chinese sound effect designer helped create an opening show highlighting the beauty of nature around the world.
We extracted some real sounds from nature, birds, insects, water, and so on. We want to create an immersive feeling for the audience. For the music, we intended to highlight the theme of horticulture, and we combined some classical pieces from home and abroad with our own original music. We want the people to be able to sense the beauty and our love for horticulture.
Addressing an international audience Sunday evening, President Xi Jinping called for the pursuit of harmony between man and nature.
We should maintain an overall balance in the ecological environment of the earth so as to let our offspring enjoy abundant material wealth while being able to see a starry sky and lush mountains and smell the fragrance of flowers.
The Chinese leader said both society and economy can benefit from ecological development.
A sound ecology itself contains infinite economic value, which can continuously create comprehensive benefits and realize sustainable social and economic development.
China produces more carbon emissions than any other country in the world, due mostly to its use of coal for energy. With pollution becoming a leading health hazard, the government has begun introducing measures to improve the environment. President Xi has promoted the idea of making environmental awareness the mainstream culture of the Chinese society. Vicente Losertalis, Secretary General of Paris-based Bureau International des Expositions, says much remains to be done, but he commended the Chinese government for concrete efforts such as reforestation and reducing coal consumption.
I've been doing works about China for 30 years, and I've witnessed China's achievements in these years, and the holding of each exposition has bettered not only the city, but also the people's thoughts.
He also praised Chinese people for their active cooperation in public and private ecological programs. Zlatica Ho, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, look out the window. A drone might be cleaning it. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia. Indonesia's disaster agency says torrential monsoon rains have led to floods and landslides that have killed more than 36 people. More than 12,000 people have been displaced. Flooding in Sumatra killed 17. At least 22 were killed by a landslide in Bengkulu province. Share the stories you see at VOA Asia Facebook and VOA 60. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, office buildings require a lot of maintenance, and much of that work needs to be done outside the building. There are windows to clean and potential structural problems to identify. The work, which calls for scaffolding built from the ground or a platform suspended from the roof, is dangerous and expensive. But soon, drones may be doing all that work for us. VOA's Kevin Enix gets our report off the ground.
Instead of scaffolding around big buildings, imagine a swarm of drones, methodically doing all kinds of chores, from cleaning windows to looking for problems and performing simple maintenance. Researchers from England and Switzerland have programmed these drones to do just that, by adding a simple anchor and tether.
So it places this anchor and then pulls back to tighten the string, and then uses an admittance controller to lower itself down to perch in a completely vertical position. By doing then this mobility, elongating the string, it can move up and down and like this assess, repair, and sense or sample the surface.
But these researchers are looking way past buildings, and they see a world where drones are crawling across all kinds of giant structures, from tunnels to subways to mines.
The drones would routinely monitor the structures, and once they identify any abnormality or any potential damage, they would go closer, perch the structure, do the inspection tasks, and if needed, they would even send repair agents that would go there and do the repair tasks.
Not only are these drones able to continuously monitor big structures, but having them around means conducting routine assessment and maintenance won't have to be a costly production.
For example, today there is the tendency to build scaffolding or to use helicopters to do various assessment tasks. And really the question is, how can we provide robotic systems that would do a lot of those tasks much faster, in a much more adaptive, much more reactive way?
As always, the fear is that robots will take away human jobs, but these researchers say drones are just another tool, not a replacement for people.
Drones still have negative connotations in some discussions, but I think it is important that we show how they can support normal workflows, how they can support humans in their day-to-day jobs to make their life easier, less dangerous, while at the same time reducing cost of operation.
The research team took their inspiration from the natural world, watching how spiders move up and down their webs. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia. Malaysia's former Prime Minister Najib Razak has failed in his bid to have seven corruption charges against him dismissed as his trial has entered the third week. At the start of his trial, Najib challenged the criminal breach of trust, abuse of power, and money laundering charges against him. You'll find much more every day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, do you sometimes feel as if the world's getting larger? Well, apparently the universe is, as we hear VOA's Rick Panaleo take a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
A few years ago, a trio of physicists won Nobel Prizes for their work that shows the universe is expanding at a rapid rate. New research led by Adam Riess, one of the three Nobel laureates at Johns Hopkins University, has confirmed that the universe is not only rapidly expanding, but is doing so at a rate 9% faster than expected. Riess's researchers say that they use new measurements taken by NASA's Hubble Space Telescope and base the jump in speed of the expansion on a trajectory that was seen shortly after the Big Bang nearly 14 billion years ago. The way scientists usually take their star measurements takes a lot of time. But using a new measurement method called DASH, the researchers were able to use the Hubble as you would with a point-and-shoot camera that many of us use today. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The saying, don't judge a book by its cover, means you shouldn't prejudge the value of something by its outward appearance. At a college near Washington, D.C., some people became human books of sorts as they discussed how appearances can be deceiving and caused preconceived biases. As we hear from VOA's Deborah Block, some of them talked about their struggles and achievements despite difficult circumstances.
Instead of checking out a book in their library, students at Northern Virginia Community College in Alexandria, Virginia, could check out a person, a human book. Patricia Cooper describes this event called the Human Library.
The goal of the Human Library is to talk to people in your community who you may otherwise not speak to because you have your own prejudices or your own stigma, and hopefully to break down some of these barriers.
College official Najib Baha knows what it is like to try to break down barriers. Because he has fair skin and an Arabic name, people are often surprised to learn he is from Afghanistan. He says he has been detained in airports by security because he does not look like what people perceive as the typical Afghan.
My goal is to inform everybody the things that I've gone through and to focus on not just somebody's skin color or their name. You shouldn't judge people because they have a certain last name, or they speak a language with an accent.
Student Angel Navia was enlightened by the conversation.
The struggles that just come from something simple, just a name or where you're from, and how that dictates some aspects of your life.
Student advisor Connie Robinson was another human book, sharing how she survived domestic abuse.
Life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we deal with it.
Colleges around the world also host discussions like this as part of the Human Library Project, an international movement that challenges stereotypes and prejudices through dialogue. Deborah Block, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us all over the internet. Of course, VOA Asia Facebook carries our program every day, as does another Facebook page, VOA Burmese. For our listeners in Myanmar who have listened to our program on Facebook, we thank you very much for joining us today. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Thomas Blondet, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day.